Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word that we have the truth and we can go into it, and we pray that you guide Pastor Howard and help him through it, that we can have understanding, and thank you for the time of fellowship together, and we pray for all the people who aren't able to make it for whatever the problem or whatever the problem might be with that, and pray that you be honored and glorified this evening.
Amen. Okay. So that is a good question. Dan, how would you respond to that one?
I would say...
Okay. Okay, we're in Daniel chapter 3. Thank you, sir. So, what, as you look down the hallway of how our culture is progressing, what can you reasonably predict is going to be an area where the Christian church is going to have a major clash with our culture? Where's the next major storm brewing?
Besides gender stuff, or
gender stuff.
Well,
as in
neutrality.
Right, okay.
I don't know, that's already pretty big.
So the gay movement, I think, yes.
But would you say that's not yet arrived?
It's going to clash a little bit more. I would say you're right. I think it's going to clash even more solidly in a little bit, where we're going to be pushed harder on that issue. Every age will have an issue or two. It'll have some issues where there are major areas of clash. But we're coming up on, I think, one there. And the reason why I bring that up is I'm wanting to fuel your thinking as we're plowing into Daniel 3, because that very specifically is one of the issues that really comes up in Daniel chapter 3. Okay, I'll just hold off a little bit, because that's okay. Okay. Well, let's fire in here. Let's go to Daniel chapter 3. The real issue here is going to be what you do when your culture turns against you. That's really what's going on, when your culture turns against you in an official way. And I think believers have always, in various places, faced that. That's why John Owen was buried where he was at the Great Ejection, where people were turned out of their pulpits and so forth. That has been going on steady in other places in the world for a long time, and it's just now kind of hitting our shores. And this is going to be a very, very good chapter to be looking at, so that we know how we've got a little bit of bracing of how we're going to handle that.
I read like CBC was, or the, like one of the next things is classifying pedophilia as another sexual orientation.
Yes, that'll be coming very soon too. Yes, the old chorus of born that way is already being applied that way, and the fact that it has been described in psychiatric circles as being something that is native or indigenous to them naturally, and that you cannot, in their view, cannot change that person. It means that that is normal and it needs to be, that'll be what comes, is that needs to be embraced. And it is horrendously surprising how fast the culture will change. If you look at the speeches that were given in the presidential election one cycle ago, and you look at the speeches given by Hillary and by Obama, both of them said absolutely, there is no question we need to uphold the concept that marriage is an institution between one man and one woman. And now if you were to listen in on the last presidential election, they've always held to the idea that it's, right? And that anybody who would hold a different point of view is just a complete what? Racist, it's hate literature, and on and on. So it'll spin your head how quickly it will be that pedophilia will be, and if you're against that, that you're just a hateful oppressor of people. So that's coming, okay? So anyway, as we go into Daniel chapter 3, we're going to see a little picture of that is so current and so up-to-date for those of us who are in the church right now. Okay, so Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 6 cubits, and its width was 60 cubits, and its width 6 cubits. Okay, first of all, where would he get an idea of making an image of gold? Maybe from his dream. Yes. Daniel said, you are the head of gold. And so he probably commissioned, because his pride was somewhat stroked by that whole thing, he probably commissioned something to be put up on a great big high pole, so this is about 90 feet in the air, that was a representation of his dream, and he's it's all of gold and it's all him. Okay? Nebuchadnezzar. So, interesting. Nebuchadnezzar was quite a narcissist. He was really in love with himself. There are old bricks that have been found. Usually they have been incorporated into another structure, or they're buried deep because they were a long time ago. But they will have every brick that came from that era has his head and shoulders on it. And I, Nebuchadnezzar, am the king of the world. It, on every brick, right? And the amount of stuff that was built, he was not short on, promoting self. The fish, it never cackles, about its million eggs or so. The hen is quite a different bird. One hen, one egg, and hear her crow. The fish we spurn, but crown the hen, which leads me to surmise, don't hide your light, but blow a horn. It pays to advertise. Okay, anyway, he was right into that whole program. He was into that program. So he's building this great high monument to himself. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent word to assemble, and we're going to have lots of long lists here, so, buckle in. To the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, and the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you will hear the sound of the... Got another big list. Ready for this? Horn, flute, lyre, tigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music. You are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. Therefore, at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, those are actually the instruments that Jonathan plays, all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Okay? What would... Give me some of the reasons, both frivolous and otherwise, that Nebuchadnezzar would have done this. Why would he have made that kind of a command? What's his point? What's he trying to communicate?
Is the image of him?
Mm-hmm. Why would he have everybody do that and then everybody bowed up? What's his point?
Wants to know that everyone is in submission to him?
I'm big dog. You bet. I am big dog. What else? Anything that would be a little bit more that we could suggest would be a more personal reason? Besides, I'm big dog and you guys need to make sure that you know that you have to be in submission to me. Right, okay, so it is a way that you can immediately isolate anybody who is not going to be willing to admit or submit to the idea you're a big dog. And he's in politics. He loves to be adored. He just loves to be adored, right? So there's an element of his ego that's involved. I mean, who puts a 90-foot thing in the middle of the desert that looks like him? Who wants to put one of those things up in an image of gold? Well, somebody who's pretty interested in his self-image, right? He's interested in his image. All right. So, the music plays, and they have a pretty good band here. So they have horns, so they have some wind instruments. They have a flute, which is talking about an instrument that can do various keys. Okay. A lyre. Jonathan plays a form of the lyre. Kind of like a guitar. That's what that was. Okay. Probably they were acoustic at this point. I don't think we had much electric.
How would they hear them then?
What's that?
The big amps behind them?
Yeah, they had the big amps. Yeah, they had the big speakers. You know, they had speakers up there like there was a Grateful Dead. So, yeah. So they had a trigon. That's a percussion thing, okay? A psaltery, that's again sort of a pipey thing. And on the bagpipe, Lodi! On the bagpipe! I remember I was doing a funeral one time, and it was commissioned that there would be somebody who would play the bagpipes. And so the family asked me, would you kind of control this guy? Because he's a bit pushy. We asked him, and now he wants to run the whole thing. He said, could you kind of handle him so that it doesn't sort of wreck the whole funeral? So I said, I'll try. You know, the one street north of the Main Street in Vermilion, there's the other funeral home about a block east of the co-op. Do you guys know where that one is? Tiny little funeral home. Anyway, it was in there, and that was a bad move because there were about 100 people there, which in this tiny little thing, it was standing room only, and I could see this all kind of coming down. So the guy there was in the bagpipe. He said, "Can I play all the way through?" No, you're not going to play all the way through. Here's the deal: as soon as I'm done, I will give the nod, and then you can go ahead and play. And I said, here is one of the a beautiful way that we could handle this. It's really, really crowded in here and so forth, and it probably won't be as enjoyable if, you know, you try and play in here. But if you were to just stand right under the window here and play, it would be just slightly in the distance, and that would be haunting. It would be really, really nice, right? He just kind of looked at me and went, like that? Okay. Thought that was, we had it all set. I wasn't quite finished the sermon, and all of a sudden, and he was right there, right? He'd snuck up behind, and everyone was just sort of run for the bomb shelters, right? Okay, so the end of the funeral, it was done. Everybody just fled, and he just kind of, and he played, and he played, and the place was empty, and then he's just kind of chuckling there. He thought, oh, yeah, put the puck in the net there. Anyway, so that was a bagpipe, okay? And so there would be something about like that that was going on here. All these instruments, because this is a big wingding out on the plane, and in order to have enough music power, you have to have lots of, lots of instruments in on it, and he wants to make sure everybody's there, and everybody's going to bow. Okay. So, for this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the, we got that list, horn, flute, tire, Sigon, lyre, Sigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. What's in it for these guys, the Chaldeans? Why are they interested in it? Are they particularly loyal and feeling the reproach of the king?
They're probably pretty mad that all of them were put to death. The wise men were put to death when they weren't able to interpret the...
And here are these foreigners, and they have high places of authority in the... They have high places of authority in the government. And they thought, hey, but that's supposed to be us. And here are these young men who are doing better than they. Actually, Daniel was able to... Well, it doesn't say that he put any of them to death. It looks like he might have managed to spare their lives. We're not sure. Some of them are still around. Some of them probably got the axe. Who knows? But it doesn't say that one way or another. Anyway, but here are these Jewish people. They are... now the object of great jealousy because they have positions, even though they're foreigners, because they're good at their job. Okay, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Any name missing there?
Daniel.
Okay, so obviously we can conclude from that what?
He bowed down.
There you go. Okay, so got that settled. Let's go forward. You think?
This wasn't there.
Okay. Actually, it is interesting. When we go forward, we're going to find that he was commissioned in different places, and he was commissioned as far away as the river Chebar, and so forth. So the fact that it doesn't explicitly say, and he bowed down too. I think it would be safe to assume he did not. The Bible is such that it does not spare people's feelings if they transgress, and it doesn't mention Daniel bowing down. I think it's safe to assume he's not there. He's on a government commission somewhere else. Okay? And that would make sense because where this image is out of the main town, and if Nebuchadnezzar himself is out of the main town, he needs to leave somebody in charge of the place. while he's gone, and we kind of know that Daniel was second in command, he's probably back at the castle, back at Babylon, and the rest of everybody's out here in the desert. Okay, so, these men do not regard, don't serve your gods, or worship the golden image that you've set up.
What verse are we on?
That was verse 12. Verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you did not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up?" Didn't give any real chance to respond to that. "Now, if you are ready," there'd be a lot of sarcasm in that, "at the moment you hear," at the very moment you're going to be observed, "at the very moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, and the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire." So he's amping up how mean a fire this is. And he asks a great question from his perspective. "And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" Why would he have said that?
Maybe he considers himself equal to a god?
Yes, he does. That's why he's being worshipped. Anything else that would be contributing to his idea of his deity and invulnerability?
He's saying that he can spare them.
Right.
But he's got that authority to do that, and no other god has that authority.
Right. And he's going on the assumption that when a nation falls, their god has fallen. And when Israel and the city of Jerusalem fell, the whole point of plundering the temple was to demonstrate, I am more powerful than their God. And that's exactly what they would have been being taught, and the young people would have been being taught all the way along here, is self-evidently, we are more powerful than your gods. We prevailed. Be prevailed. All right. Who can deliver you out of my hands?
But
yes.
This is all in Daniel here. This is in chronological order, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see how he had a brief moment of revelation, of
insight,
truth, of insight, and he's just completely. Yeah, that was neat.
Yeah, and all he got out of that was, "Hey, I'm the head of gold."
Yeah.
Cool me.
Yeah.
Right? Cool me. All right. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter." That sounds a bit cheeky in the English. It isn't in the Hebrew. He's saying, here is something that is already established. And so it's respectful. It's not like, "I don't even have to talk to you." That's not what's being said. "If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of the blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." What does he mean by the last phrase?
That God actually is more powerful than him.
Okay. Absolutely, they understand that. But are they working on the assumption that, of course, God will spare me?
No.
No. Here's what they've said. God is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, but no matter what happens, at the end of the day, he will have delivered us from your hand. Mm-hmm. What a great way to think of death. What a great way to think of death.
Right, because they, as far as they were concerned, they were going to die in the furnace, or they
right.
were going to die.
Either going to live, or you're going to die. Yeah. And if we die, what more can you do to us? Yeah. Right? But he could deliver us, but there's no guarantee. But one way or another, he's going to deliver us from your hand. What great theology. Okay, now, hang on there a moment. Let's do a little bit of thinking. Put yourself back in that time in their skin. You know, there were a boatload of rationalizations that would have run through their mind. These guys aren't fools. They would have had all kinds of excuses rolling around in their head of why maybe this time it wouldn't be so bad to bow down. What would be rolling through their heads? Which is a nice way of saying, what would be some of the ones that would be rolling around in your head if you were there? How could you rationalize bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar?
They may have said submit to the government or something. Is that what you mean?
Hey, it's the law. I mean, sure, I need to follow God, but it's the law. It's the law, right? And so we can't disobey the law. That would have been... And I mean, these are young guys, okay? And they didn't live through the 1960s, and I don't know if they have one Beatle record, okay? They probably don't know what happened at Woodstock. They're young guys, okay? So they haven't got the, you know, resist authority whole thing. So it's the law. Gotta. That's a pretty natch. What other rationalizations would have been running through their head?
Well, they're servants of God, so they might have actually been rationalizing it with, I can serve God better further on if I actually do just submit this one time.
You're right. You're right.
I can minister later.
I remember talking to the leader of a national party, which shall remain, I don't know if I'm going to remain nameless or not. Anyway, my father was running as an MP in the 1988 election. And so I was there one time when the leader of the party that Dad was running for came. And he was running on a ticket of, you know, in all of these things, I'm a social conservative, but I will be a good representative of my constituency. I'll vote as my constituency demands. And so I asked him, I said, so, I knew the riding he was running in. I said, so, if a majority of, or you put it to a plebiscite or whatever on the issue of capital punishment, what are you going to do? And of course he smiled. He said, well, I happen to know that over 70%, close to 80% of my constituency want capital punishment. That's easy, I'll vote for capital punishment. I said, okay, that was an easy one. I said, how about abortion? He said, well, you know that I don't approve of abortion. I knew that because he, like his father before him, had preached on the radio in Western Canada. And he said, but if 60%, he said, I'll try and make the best case I can, and then we'll put it to a plebiscite, but if 60% of my constituency want me to vote for abortion, I will. And I said, why? And he said, very much like what you just said, Autumn, if I stay in the game and I get elected, the amount of good that I will be able to do will be far greater than if I'm standing on the sidelines. I didn't have the wit to say it then. I would say it now, which is, if you get in by way of a moral compromise, it will be only the first of a long series of compromises. And what you have done is you've gone on the national stage and set the precedent for moral compromise attached to the name of Christ. What I did say to him is, I would rather chew off my arm without anesthetic than ever put up my hand and vote for abortion. But that was the idea, is in order to have the forum for being involved and being able to do some good, we're going to need to make some micro compromises. Okay? That probably ran through their mind. You know, don't have to, this is not an everyday thing. We're not being asked to do this every day of the week, but if we would just do the thing right now where we would bow, offer up your pinch of incense to Caesar, just, and I mean, after all, can't you just ask for forgiveness afterward, right? In order to stay in the game, why not compromise? The answer to that is, if you were thinking that, what is the answer to that?
Sin. It's always better to obey God.
Okay. Yes, excellent.
As well.
Yes, as well.
Well, as well as they're going to see you sell out, so they aren't going to see when you do try to take a stand for something.
You've already established yourself as a man less...
Yeah.
Who doesn't have integrity.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at it from the point of view of a soldier who's under command, okay, or as a policeman, if you walk up to a policeman and you say, I know that the speed limit is 110K, and you normally don't ticket until you're a fair piece over 120. But you know something? I've got the convertible for one day. And I've always wanted to have hair straight back, wind in my hair. So I'd like for you to give me the permission to take it up to $150. Can he say yes? He does not have the authority to grant anybody the permission to go $150. It is not within his authority to grant permission to do that. If we get up in the morning and we are bond slaves of the Lord Jesus Christ, it is, we do not have the permission to temporarily grant ourselves the liberty to break his law. We can't grant ourselves the authority to do that. We don't have the, what we have the authority to do is obey. That's what we got the authority to do. Okay? All right, what other kind of ways where you could get tangled up here into the area of situational ethics? What other rationalizations could there be for just bowing down this once and worshiping?
Just want to do what everyone else is doing, and you're afraid to be the one.
Yeah, you don't want to be to be the society's bad guy.
Yeah.
Right? Because
you're afraid to stand up for Christ. Yeah.
Sure. So some of it could be fear, but you can disguise that by saying, you know something? We're interested in evangelism. We're interested in people coming to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. And we're not going to do that if they always think that we're the bad guy. So we need to take some steps so that they like us. So that the society kind of thinks we're pretty cool and that we're basically pretty good chaps. Okay? Because to not bow in their situation would be, oh, these guys are ready to partake of some sort of a rebellion, right? These are the dissidents. These are the ones who aren't going with the government. They're the revolutionaries, the counters. You don't want to self-identify with them. Ah, just bow down. Tomorrow you don't have to bow down, just today. Okay, that could have been a rationalization. Here's another one, a little closer to home. And that's to understand, okay, so bowing down. You'll notice when President Obama, for example, met with the Emperor of Japan, do you remember how he responded to the Emperor of Japan when he met a year and a half ago? Okay, in Japan there is a polite bow of I respect you, you respect me. Right? There is a bow of I am sorry, I ask your forgiveness. It's like this. Right? That's what Mitsubishi did because they were cooking their results. Right? So you saw when they were admitting that they were cooking their books and that they had been cheating, they had to go like this. And they have to hold that position for about 3 seconds. That's, okay, I'm a bad guy.
And close their eyes, too?
Yeah. And then there is the thing that you need to do toward the emperor, because the emperor, in their concept, is what? God. You do what Obama did, and that is you bow down fully, and you hold that for some time. And it's more than just, hey, dude, how are you? It is, okay, I acknowledge that, or I'm not going to take you on in the fact that you're self-professing yourself to be a god. Okay? That's what that is saying. That's why he is the first president who has ever done that. Nobody else would ever be willing to do that. No British politician has ever done that. And certainly, you know, types like Ronald Reagan and Maggie Thatcher would never do that, okay? Because realize that there's something more. But why would Obama do that? That's because he would say, in this culture, to fail to affirm is read as being hostile to that group, right? To fail to affirm them is read to be you are a hater. And that's exactly what we're going to be tagged with in the Church of Jesus Christ, correct? At the end of the day, are they really, really intent to have a church service blessed by a pastor and have that pastor invoke the blessing of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob on their marriage? Is that really what they're going for? Mm-hmm. No. Because there's lots of churches that'll do that. There's lots of places where they can get that done. There's a bigger issue, and that is they are not willing to say even, leave it at, okay, you have your value system and I have my value system. They can't stop short of, I affirm you. I affirm, and I affirm that you are just as godly, just as on your way to heaven, just as right before God in your lifestyle that I am, maybe a little more. They can't stop short of that. That's why the big push is on. And the thing that's coming down the pipe, I've been warned this from several sources, there's echoes of this already coming through the legislature. It'll probably come federal now, if it doesn't happen very quickly on a provincial level. And that is, the church has one place where the hair is short. And that is where, meaning where we're susceptible in their view, and that is if you do not incorporate a public statement from your church where you affirm them and their lifestyle as it is, as being okay and you don't need to change it and it isn't sin, you will lose your tax-exempt status. Okay, that'll be the first thing. And then as the culture continues to turn, it'll go harsher. But that's the next thing we're facing, okay? And that one is coming. And there are lots of churches right now that are saying, in this culture, to fail to affirm is read as hostile, so let's not be read as hostile. In fact, a major denomination that has thousands of congregations across Western Canada and Canada as a whole, and that has stood for evangelicalism, the president of that group has written in a blog, and basically if you did the CNN soundbite, it is, in this culture to fail to affirm is read as hostile, we can't do that as a church. So here's one of those areas where we're going to have to bow. We're going to have to. And besides, if we don't, we'll lose our tax status. And if we lose our tax status, all of these churches will fold and there won't be any gospel. So God obviously doesn't want that. So we're going to have to offer up our pinch of incense to Caesar. There's already lots of talk of, and this would have been going through their minds, maybe it's a small price to pay to continue to have a voice in the culture. Right? Maybe it's a small price to pay. The ones I had are, that's the law. We don't have any choice. There'll be some who say, it's the law. We have to. Right? It's preferable to not endanger the entire community and stay alive so that we're able to evangelize another day. Notice that when they came along here, they say, so here's the deal. There's a particular group, an identifiable group. It's the Jews. And they would have had a lot of pressure from their own people. There were lots of Jewish people who had come and been taken hostage. Lots of them. Remember in chapter 1, it said that there were four people who decided to try and maintain a Mosaic covenant diet. And it said, we're going to compare you to the rest. What rest? The thousands of other Jewish prisoners who had decided to fully become Babylonian. And so here is a thing where the Jewish people are being identified. And so you could have other Jewish people that they grew up together and saying, hey, dude, like, I get your idea. I understand your thing where you're saying you can't bow, but when you're not bowing, you're putting the rest of us in jeopardy. You're giving all of us a bad name. Like, you're endangering all of us. And those sorts of things are now being published in blogs, where churches are saying, well, there's a lot of churches that are trying to affirm and have an evangelistic appeal, an evangelistic position in their community, and affirm the gay community and kind of not be ostracized by our community. But there's some of you guys, you're not cooperating, and you're not bending. And you know, you're going to make us the focus of hate of the entire community. So even if you think, okay, so I need to do this, would you look around at who else you're endangering? I'll tell you what, a God of love would say, you put aside your little sticky legalistic thing, put that aside for a bit, and you look out for your other fellow countrymen, right? That's pressure that's being put on right now. That's coming, okay? Better to bend a bit and keep some influence than die and lose all influence. And besides, God is love. He's not so hung up about his rules that he ever intended it for you to cost you your life. Right? How are you going to answer that?
Wrong.
Okay, so in celebration of our alter ego, which is the ammo depot, I actually mean this with great seriousness. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a good day to die. It is never a good day to compromise. If you're a believer and you die, are you expecting that you're going to be in a 1976 double-wide mobile home piece of paradise? Are you thinking there's slummy parts of heaven? Do you want to stand at the Bema of Christ and sold out? It's always a good day to die. It's never a bad day to die. To depart is what? Far better. But you're not at liberty to decide that you're going to bail on truth. You're not at liberty to decide you're going to bail on truth so that you will have more influence down the road. You're not allowed to bail on truth thinking, well, then at least we keep the gospel in there. God does not advance the case of the gospel through servants who've already compromised the truth. Because when you stand up and you say the truth, they already know you sold out. You don't have a pulpit anymore if you compromise. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath. He was actually, we need to look back there. He was filled with wrath before. He was in rage and anger. He's just getting even more angry, even though he's fully angry. Okay, so he's about to blow a head gasket. And his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay, so he's doing the, his face is menacing thing, okay? You're supposed to be terrified. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. Okay, and actually they have found kilns that were capable of great heat, okay? The design was actually quite solid. It was quite good. What they would just need to do is put in more and more and more fuel and then pump more and more air at it. And you could use it to smelt steel with some of the stuff that they had. So, he commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Why? Do you think Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were Schwarzenegger types and it took, some pretty good guys to get them? What would be the point in that? Yeah, and it's sort of overkill on... I got the power, right? Overkill on, I got way more power than you do, right? So, to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire, and it does take a bit more horsepower to chuck a body, okay? Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes. Okay, so, by the way, just while we're on it here, their caps. What are you kind of picturing?
Baseball caps. Blue
Jays. Okay. Cat or blue, let's go. Blue Jays, play golf. What's that?
Little Jewish cap, maybe?
Nope, wasn't that. Didn't have Jewish little yarmulkes. It wasn't a yarmulke. They weren't allowed to.
Bald spot?
What's that?
They didn't have a bald spot?
Not that we're aware of, okay. It's actually turban, just so you know.
Turban?
Okay? Yeah, not a turbine, which is an energy source.
No, turban.
Yes.
They were wearing turbans.
They were wearing turbans. Matter of fact, just so that you're kind of up to date on this, so did Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob wear turbans. Okay. That's right. Because everybody, why would they, why do they wear a turban? What's the point of a turban?
To keep their head cool.
Okay, so some of it would be a thought of the coolness. Are there some other more practical reasons where people who are living in a hot, dusty country would?
Keep their hair clean.
A lot of the forefathers probably had turbans for the same reason that the Sikhs have turbans today. They have very, very long hair, and they wrap it up in a cloth and then pile it up on top of the hair to keep it basically out of the dust so that you don't have to have it in the shower every day, right?
So they grew it back then too?
Yes.
Just like Sikhs?
Actually, they were having long hair and had turbans a long time before the Sikhs, okay?
Really?
But that's... So just if you're... that just as a little bit of an aside, if you see somebody going down the road and you see turban, you go, okay, so there's a terrorist and there's a... No, your forefathers in the faith wore a turban, just so you know. A little bit of a reality check there. Okay, so...
Also running around killing people.
Okay, so... Their caps and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because of the king's command, the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. Which means that they went right into that top there. It'd be like a big funnel, round for a Brit, and then goes up to a funnel, into a peak. And they would have been thrown into the top and landed right on top of the flaming fuel pile. Okay, so... Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astounded and stood up in haste. He said to the high officials, "Was it not three men were cast into the midst of the fire?" They replied to the king, "Certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Understand from that, what he means by that is, it looks like there's something supernatural about the fourth one.
What does he mean by son of gods, though? Like, why would he say
it gives you a good understanding of what they mean to be, for example, a son of thunder, or a son of a gun, or whatever. It would be the idea of the offspring of God, somebody who is deity, or... more to the point, very God. Looks like it's an actual God who's in there. Okay? So, what frame of reference would he have to make that determination? None, except, okay, so he does know humanity. He does know a whole bunch of different ethnic backgrounds, and he says, okay, this is different. This one looks like there's something supernatural about it. There was something that was immediately available to them. Just like even people who've never seen an angel before, they see an angel, they fall down, they go, "Ooh, that's an angel, I'm probably going to die." Okay? Because the angel has to kind of pick them up and say, "Okay, dude, don't die." Right? That's usually what's going on. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of the blazing fire. He responded and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the..." Man, this is a great term. El Elyon. The El Elyon. The Most High God. If you'd been reading scriptures, you wouldn't have run across that for a long, long time. In fact, you hadn't heard that expression much. since a guy by the name of Melchizedek. Back in the day of Melchizedek, Melchizedek came up to Abraham. And Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek, who was the king of Salem, peace. And he described himself as a priest of the El Elyon, the Most High God, God, the Highest One. So they had, in their theology, they had an idea that there were different gods and they had different kind of rankings. And he would have understood that he was a lower ranking god, but he was hoping he'd kind of pull up the center and, you know, establish himself as maybe something more powerful, being that he was a god. But he understands, okay, so these guys are servants of the Most High God. I just got trumped. Okay, I just got trumped. Not the 2016 version of trumped, I mean small t trumped. Okay. Well, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. What happened to the fourth one? He's not under any command to go and talk to any leader. He doesn't need to be there. The satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel." Again, he's a little bit ambivalent. It's a bit enigmatic to him just who that was. So one time he calls him divine, the other time he's calling him his angel. Sent his angel and delivered his servant who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb. Okay, let's not overreact by any means. Shall be torn, and they did actually do this. This is one of their favorites, is to tie him between two horses or two camels and just kind of pull them apart. Kind of like you did when you were 5 years old with a grasshopper. And their houses reduced to a rubbish heap. It's actually basically a latrine, okay? Public latrine. Inasmuch as there is no other god who is able to deliver in this way. Then the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. If the Lord tarries and the end is not soon. Oh, and by the way, the coming of the Lord is soon. We just, meaning sudden. Over and over again, he says, behold, I come quickly, for example. And what that means is suddenly. Doesn't mean that the idea that there's been a 2,000-year interruption is somehow a deviation of the plan. It just means when all of these things start to happen, it all starts to happen rapid fire, suddenly, okay? So the Lord is coming soon in that regard. However, if we go through a time where the Church of Jesus Christ gets into the crosshairs of, we are going to stand and say, no, homosexuality as a lifestyle is sin. And anyone who practices that, who that is at the end of the day their identity, and their identity is not Christ because of their repentance and forsaking of that sin, they're going to hell. And if you follow Muhammad and you understand that what he says goes, you are on your way to hell. And if you quote John 14, it says, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And if that wasn't bad enough, the next phrase, no one comes to the Father except through me. That will totally not be tolerated in our culture as it's progressing. Totally won't be tolerated. If we're allowed to live as the church makes those adjustments, understand this. The only way we will have any kind of a godly effect on our culture is if we open ourselves up to the possibility of persecution or death and stand firm. We will absolutely gain nothing by compromising. It's only by standing firm that we will have any possibility of then the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. Never, even in spite of the fact it's still a pagan nation, somehow God worked in the heart of this ill-tempered tyrant that those who are followers of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were given now a prominent place where they could have some influence on their culture. It will only be gained by sticking to our guns. It will never be gained by compromising. And there will be a thousand reasons why we should compromise, where we're putting a target on the back of other believers and they don't want the target there, where it's just a short-term thing and it's way better for us to, and I mean, we don't want all these people, you don't want your kids to die. There'll be all of those kind of reasons will come up. And you know something? They have come up for believers of all ages at all times. And the ones who made an impact for their Lord were the ones who would seal what they believe with their life. And they wouldn't compromise. What a great chapter, eh? What a great chapter. Any questions?
This reminds me of the Fox's Book of Martyrs.
Sure does. As a church, you guys contributed to Kelly and I being able to go on the Ligonier tour. And we've been really grateful. That was one of those really, really beautiful moments for Kelly and I. But in the original copy, and if you look up on Amazon and you look up Fox's Book of Martyrs, one of the dust covers for it will be a very, very elaborately carved door frame. And that place still stands, okay? And the reason why he took that picture was because just outside that door is where they sent the martyrs of London to be burned. And if you look at that picture, you'll see that very, very intricately carved doorway, and there is a window right up there, and that's where Bloody Mary sat to watch as a spectator sport as people were burned alive. One of the most prominent was John Rogers. And that was that case where he was allowed to come out anytime he willed from the prison, which was just over here. We looked at the prison there. He was labeled to come out, allowed to come out anytime he felt like, as long as he promised not to preach the gospel. So he could never come out. Because it was never going to be within his authority to not preach the gospel, right? He could never agree that he was not going to preach the gospel. Because that's a command. Anyway, as he had, I think it was 11 children, And the day came where Bloody Mary said, "Okay, you've been stubborn long enough. Okay, now you're going to be burned at the stake." And as he walked out, all along the pathway where he was going to walk to the stake were the members of his church. And they were cheering him on. "You go, Pastor. Show them you're tough. Be a man." And the ones who were crying out the loudest were John Rogers' kids. "Come on, Dad. You can do this." And they gave him encouragement and they cheered him on his way to the flames. Because that was expected. That's what you do when you get hit with a command. You cannot be a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ and obey. Oh. Anyway, there's a happy moment. The happy moment is what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said. The Lord is capable of delivering us from their hand. And if things get bad enough one way or another, he will deliver us from their hand. One way or the other.
Did any of these martyrs have children?
Well, John Rogers did, for example. Patrick. Oh, what's his name?
Yeah.